Hi, it's Dave Talamo here, founder and director of Wilderness Reflections. Thanks for taking some time to listen to us today. Really, my pleasure to be here with my colleague and longtime acquaintance, Jonathan Gustin. He's the founder of the Purpose Guides Institute. And I'll say more about you in a moment, Jonathan, but just really great to be chatting with you here.
Yeah, likewise. I've been looking forward to our conversation. We have these over dinners, but never recorded, so look forward to seeing what happens.
Well, me as well, and it's really great just to be sitting here with you. You've been doing this work around people's life purpose for 15 years, and a guide in other capacities as a therapist and as a meditation teacher for 20 years. And in particular, I know from our other conversations that really your passion, or one of them, is the depth of soul work and of guiding people into their life's purpose. And
yeah,
what's exciting about that to you?
Oh, goodness, what isn't exciting about it? You know, my passion is awakening unused potential, you might say.
Nice.
And you know, I know you're familiar with this, but for the people who are listening, the model that I use, the Three Worlds model. And so, you know, to me, so, you know, my background as a meditation teacher, that is to help guide people to experience the, what you might call the transcendent dimension of our being.
The upper world, we sometimes call it, out on the quest.
Yeah, the upper world. When the edges of our self-sense begin to soften and dissolve, and we sort of sink into who we are at the level of essence. And we experience ourselves as the mystery itself that animates and permeates everything, yet transcends all. It's the timeless dimension, or the unit of intimacy, that's associated with the enlightenment of the Buddha.
So big stuff, huge, broad perspective. So you mentioned the Three Worlds model. You want to just spell out what you mean?
So that's one spiritual aspiration, that we are able to answer the question, who am I, or what am I, at the level of essence? But there are other potent questions. One of them is the one that therapy asks, which is, you know, how can I simply be an emotional adult? How can I be an equanimous person? How can I give and receive love and metabolize joy? How can I bring what's unconscious and make it conscious? And this, in some ways, is actually one of the most difficult.
Serious. Well, I think we all can relate to that.
Yeah, my standard joke is when my father's second wife coronates me as an emotional adult, I'll know I've made it. That and my wife. Wow. So it's a beautiful awakening in its own right. But there's a third piece that gets less attention, that psychotherapy, maybe other than, say, Jungians or people who study James Hillman, and then the path of the Buddha, don't really attend to. And that's really the whole area of soul, the burrowing down into our depths, where we discover our place, our ecological niche, our habitat, the place where we belong, where we know our gifts, we know the people for whom our gifts are meant, and we offer our soul's deepest purpose as a demonstration of love and service to the world.
Right, and we see people longing for that a lot, coming out on quest, of course, people in midlife transitions, other phases of life, just coming into adulthood as well. So you're saying upper world, kind of connection to essence, spirit, middle world, becoming an emotional adult, functioning well in your everyday life, and then underworld, lower world of soul. And say a little more about what you mean about soul.
Sure. Well, there's in integral circles, we talk about wake up, grow up, show up. So we want to wake up to the mystery. We want to grow up into emotional adults. But there's this other question, what do I do? You know, as the poet Mary Oliver put it, what do I do with this one wild, precious life? And psychotherapy doesn't really address that, at least head on. And meditation traditions like Zen or Advaita Vedanta don't address that head on. But the whole question of soul, of the descent to soul, this underworld journey, is a direct path to experiencing our are the answer to the question, where do I belong? So one way I kind of divvy it up is, instead of just using the word purpose, I sort of see there's sort of eight facets.
So a pretty developed system you have.
Yeah, I call it the purpose octagon system, just because it has eight facets to it. So the first question is, you know, what is the vision of my purpose, the 30,000 foot perspective?
Right.
And then what are the soul level values and powers? By powers, I mean like gifts or talents that we've been given by the mystery, by life, to support our vision.
And maybe just before you go further, I think it'd be helpful for you to say what you mean by soul.
Cause sure, yeah.
People, you know, you got soul or soul food or, you know, what are we talking about?
Well, I think that does point to it. The first thing I'll say is that I cannot, it's like saying what is the mystery or what is God and what is soul. So I will point to it. Hopefully my words will be perfumed with some truth that'll lead a person to the sense of soul. But soul doesn't really have a definition per se. Having said that, one definition I like of soul is, and this is from Frederick Buchner, a theologian. He said, you want to find that place where your deepest gladness and the world's hunger meets.
Yeah, I've heard Howard Thurman attributed to that one too.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think maybe I'm confusing, but that's beautiful. Say it again.
Yeah, it's a beautiful summation of purpose and soul. So when you embody your soul's purpose, you have found that sweet spot where your deepest gladness, your deepest joy, and the world's hunger, the world's ache, meets. So, for instance, I have a great passion for jazz drumming and
right.
skiing, but no one really wants to pay me or even for free to listen to me play jazz drums and watch me ski. So it's a passion, but the world isn't hungering for me to do that. But, you know, Buddy Rich or some other great drummer, someone has a passion, an ache to listen to them. So in my case, as being a midwife to wholeness, a mentor to wholeness, it is both my deepest gladness and it's what the world wants from me. So when you experience your soul place, I think the word place is really helpful. When you kind of ka-chunk, when you rest in the pocket, the groove, as we say in jazz drums, of your soul, you are by necessity, by definition, you are doing the work that brings you alive and deeply glad, and the world is asking for it. It's your service. It's another way of saying it is that soul is the reason you took a human birth. It's the gift that you were meant to give. And some Native American traditions, they talk about the giveaway. Like, what's truly yours to give to your people?
Right, and so maybe you could say something more about that, at least in our circles when we talk about the giveaway. It's yours and it's not yours at the same time. It's something that wants to come through you. And I don't know if that's a shared perspective that we have, but it's not. And it's not necessarily what I'm good at, because you might be great at jazz drumming, but the world's not hungry for that. Or in my own case, I'm good at math, but other than my grandmother, there was nobody who ever really hungered for me to be a mathematician in the world. So maybe that's something you can speak to, some about that sense of it being something that wants to come through us as well as something we want or are passionate about.
Yeah, but I want to challenge you on something. So
Great.
So on the math piece, and you know, I could totally be wrong about this, but it seems to me that being given a gift for being able to do math, there's a certain wiring that your brain has that's
sure.
a power that somehow, and I don't know how it is, and I want to ask you if you have an intonation, a hunch about this, that you know other vision quest guides don't have this ability to mathematically solve for something. Is there a way that power aids or supports your work as a soul guide, a quest guide?
Interesting question. Never quite thought about it in that term. You know, there's a narrow piece of logistics and that kind of stuff that is supported by that part of myself. I think more of just the patterns that one sees in nature, and the kind of reading of patterns and the discerning of something different's happening in that tree over there. It's out of the pattern. Oh, it's because there's something moving in the branches. What is that? You know, so kind of more in the nature awareness and nature connection realm, more than in the problem solving side of it. That's kind of there's a certain mathematical pattern recognition that is very fed and useful. And even in sitting with people, there's a sense of something, the pattern's just shifting. You know, their left cheek muscle just tightened or twitched. And not that you think that, but you kind of take it in and in your gut get the pattern shifting, and can contact that and explore that piece of wildness that's showing up in them or in the environment around you.
So maybe it would have more utility for you to say, and, you know, again, sweep it off if it's not true for you, but that one of your soul's powers is pattern recognition, which enables you, on the one hand, to do math, which you're not pursuing, but you could, but also enables you as a clinician and as a vision quest guide and as a just observing nature, being able to see patterns. So maybe pattern recognition is your power, and the mathematical ability flows through it.
Could be.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I can see this is one of the ways that you work with the people you work with, I imagine, as you're doing with me.
Yeah, exactly. There's, you know, one of the things that we can sort of sleuth with our minds as opposed to an outright soul encounter. I should probably define that in a moment.
Great.
But is, you know, what are some of our powers? Those things are probably apparent to us by the time we're in our 20s, 30s, 40s, and beyond. And those are the things that will support whatever the soul level vision is, you know, are we an introvert? Are we an extrovert? Are we able to see patterns or not? So, you know, what are we good at? Doesn't necessarily mean that you have to become a mathematician.
Sure.
But then those are the things that are going to support our service to our people.
Now, there's some people, maybe yourself to some extent, knowing you're broadly talented and skilled in many areas, is it your sense that that soul and purpose expression is going to engage all of those or almost all of those? You know,
usually, yeah. It's this isn't something I could prove. I'd have to do, you know, huge study. But it seems to me that it's in nature, like nothing's wasted. I mean, when you're a nature observer like me, and to imagine that there would be a whole sort of, you know, God or mystery given power, as I call it, that will just simply not serve our vision, our purpose, our giveaway, our service to the world. It doesn't seem like that to me.
Well, I mean, what would you say about, say, your own passion for jazz drumming? Like, it certainly feeds your enjoyment, and that feeds the rest of your life, including your purpose.
Yeah.
But
well, I learn a lot from jazz drumming. So for the rhythm, just the rhythm of teaching, the rhythm of listening, the rhythm of making love, the rhythm of parenting. And then when I listen to jazz musicians, they teach me how to teach, the way they improvise. They're listening to the other musicians. They're listening to the audience if they're really good. And they're playing with the whole field around them. And I think that's what a good guide or a good clinician or a good purpose guide does. So while I wasn't given the gift of being a master drummer, even if I had practiced 10 hours a day, you know, I would have gotten much better. But it was clear to me that that wasn't the God-given talent.
Right.
The study of and the appreciation of jazz is transferable. Like, there's almost nothing. And the same thing with skiing, that rhythm and that motion. So I'm in the nothing is wasted sort of category of our interests. I mean, you know, I suppose there are some things. My penchant for watching certain YouTube videos is just pleasure. Not everything has to mean everything. Yeah. So there was a term I threw out that I wanted to mention. So to me, the word purpose guiding goes all the way from just simply our delivery system, our vocation, like what is the form in which we share our gifts, right? So there are, you know, a million psychotherapists. But to me, that's not a purpose. It's a delivery
system.
It's a job. For our purpose. Mm. It's a good thing to write on a card, and it's a good thing because people understand what that is. But the way you work with your clients, the way I work with my clients, the way Freud worked with his and Jung worked with his, every one of us is delivering something that is in some ways unique to our soul.
Totally.
Yeah. So that's the level of delivery system. But purpose guiding can go all the way down to an encounter with an image or symbol at the center of our being that informs, that infuses our life's work and our service.
Could you give an example or two of that?
Sure. So for me, when I was 21, I was doing a kind of a solo spiritual exploration in a cabin in northern Ontario.
Nice.
And all of a sudden, boom, these words came to me. And it felt like the mystery had given me my soul name. And it was two words. It just said, whole person midwifery. And wow. I never heard that before.
That's a download.
I had never, you know, I was 21. And of course, there was no interest, nor was I confused that I was supposed to be a midwife helping deliver babies. It just, that's not me. And I knew right away that what that was at a kind of a gut level, and that was me. And I knew it would take decades to study enough to actually embody that name. So that's why I ended up becoming a meditation teacher, a lay ordained, you know, Zen priest, a psychotherapist, a purpose guide.
So you kind of worked those worlds yourself in a way, from the Zen in the upper world to the therapy in the middle world and the Integral Awakening Center that you founded 15 years ago or so, sort of dipping down lower and to where you are now with the Purpose Guide Institute.
Yeah, yeah. So I believe each person has the potential, the ability to have a soul encounter. And that's like a glimpse or an image of your deepest service to the world. Again, that, you know, the place where your deepest gladness and the world's hunger meets. And one soul encounter can be sufficient for a lifetime. It can also happen that, you know, you'll have multiple, you'll have updates,
sure,
as it were, as life goes on. A mutual friend of ours, Bill Plotkin, when he was on a quest, he received the name Cocoon Weaver.
Right.
And for him, that has informed all his work through all the delivery systems. He's, you know, a guide and a cyclist and an author and a teacher and a psychologist. So, you know, one message that I never get bored of speaking into life is that you belong. We human beings, we belong, and we seem to be the one species that can refuse our own flowering.
Right.
Because we live in a society where, I don't know about you, but my parents said, what do you want to do when you grow up? What do you want to be? And by that, they meant the delivery system.
Right.
And they didn't know their own soul's purpose. They wouldn't have said that consciously or if you had asked the question. But I have a 7-year-old, you well know.
Yes, and he's awesome.
Oh, thanks. And I'm planting the seed now, and I will say to him, do you know that you have a deep purpose secreted within you? Do you have any sense yet, you know, what that may be? And he shrugs his shoulders and he says no. And I'm like, that's totally fine. And then, you know, a year later I'll just introduce it again. And so it's early. I mean, most 7-year-olds don't have a, you know, the Mozarts do, but very few 7-year-olds have that sense. But he's growing up with the narrative, with the story, that there's not just wake up, there's not just grow up, but there's also show up. Mm. And there's a show up at a soul, a deep spiritual level.
Beautiful. And so that's a beautiful example for us parents and teachers with just the way we might inspire that curiosity for the young ones. What does it look like in helping an adult kind of seek their purpose? What are some of the ways that you do that?
So I would say there's like two broad baskets. So one is soul encounter. And that's like if you imagine, you know, the evolutionary impulse, the the impulse to grow as an arrow. So the tip of the arrow are these amazing soul encounter technologies. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're an expert at many of them, one of them being the quest. Do you call it Vision Quest? There's another word.
Usually we call it a Wilderness Quest.
Wilderness Quest. I mean, Wilderness Quests are amongst the most powerful soul encounter technologies available out there. But there's also the back of the arrow. And the back of the arrow is the drag, if you will. If it's you know, short feathers, it can actually help the arrow fly. But if there's a huge, you know, feathers all over the place, it creates drag on the soul encounter. And so what I mean here is resistance, fears, concerns, reservations, homeostasis in general.
Sure, all the conditioning, reasons not to be big and beautiful and shine and so forth.
Yeah, and so there are, exactly, there are, one way to look at it is that there are sub-personalities that want to, that are skeptical, cynical, the image consultant, we want to look good, we don't want to seem
right.
Silly or stupid, wounded child, loyal soldiers. So these are some of the facets of self that are like, stand at the threshold and go, nuh-uh,
right.
This is too threatening to what I've already got, right?
So I imagine when you're, I have a few questions, but the first one, you're training people to become purpose guides or working with people directly towards their own purpose. That's stuff that you really have to dance with.
And very much. So whether I'm doing individual guiding or I'm training people to be guides, one of the big pieces is to come with love and respect for all the parts of us that are not ready for transformation. So, you know, I've been doing transformative work, you know, on myself or with myself, exposing myself to transformative work for decades now. But whenever I come to the next threshold, it's still scary.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've got a modestly successful life, and do I want to threaten that? Do I want to upset the apple cart? Well, part of me says no.
You bet.
I don't want to go on another quest. Oh my God, what if it works?
Exactly. Or what if it doesn't?
And what if it doesn't? Yeah, so there's fear in both places. And the other part of resistance is that it's my contention that actually pretty much everyone, basically everybody, is living a purposeful life, but their purpose is usually unconscious, and it's what I would call a default purpose.
So what do you mean?
Well, so, you know, if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we all desire a certain level of safety, security. We want to feel like we belong just at the level of everyday personality and ego. We want to experience esteem, both our self-esteem and esteem from others. And so these things are organic, they're natural, and they're good, but we can elevate them. We can become excessively attached.
Sure.
Right? So do I want money? Yes. But can I become excessively attached to it? Absolutely. Do I want to have friends? Yes. But can I become excessively attached to being popular? Yes. So by default in this society, we take those as our kind of highest purpose,
right.
Our inherited purpose. And that obscures our soul level purpose. So part of purpose guiding is, one, is finding the voices, the facets, the sub-personalities that are not so interested in taking the underworld journey. And another part is being able to bring into consciousness the current purpose that we're actually living through most of the time. And it's not just like a one-shot deal. It's not like the second I realized, you know, that part of what was running me was wanting to be safe, secure, successful, and so forth, that it was done. Those things have an incredible magnetic pull.
Right.
And so there's always an awareness of like, what purpose is leading here? My soul level purpose to midwife wholeness, or, you know, greed, or wanting to be liked, or, you know, whatever it may be.
Nice. So now you've done this kind of purpose work with how many people at this point, would you say?
Oh, hundreds.
Hundreds.
Yeah, it's a lot.
A lot. And age range of people you've seen really take to this purpose work, as you said, most 7-year-olds aren't developmentally there.
No. Yeah, I'm not doing purpose work with my son. I'm introducing the story, like the myth. And I mean that in the best sense,
right.
That he's growing up with that. I mean, I've worked with people all the way from early 20s to their 80s. But that said, most people, it seems to be 40s, 30s, 50s, 60s. So, it's actually a pretty big age range.
It is. Yeah. Sort of all adults and elders even.
Yeah. Sometimes there are folks who they kind of wake up to purpose, you know, later in life. And that's better than not waking up at all.
Sure.
In this culture, many, many, many people won't come up to that threshold. So yeah, I've had, you know, 80 somethings in my group, but that's rare.
And you know, maybe it's obvious, but why does it matter that people wake up to their purpose? Kind of on the individual level and maybe on the larger societal level.
Well, I'd say individually, I'm not a purpose evangelist or a fundamentalist. So
thank God.
I don't think everyone has to do anything. That's the thing about the mystery. It's mysterious. So, you know, if I look at one of my upper world or transcendent teachers, like I don't think Ramana Maharshi or the Buddha should have done anything differently. I'm so glad they were specialists. There are people who just specialize in, you know, middle world psychotherapy or upper world meditation. So I don't want anyone listening to this think like, oh my God, it's another thing on my list. I have to wake up to my soul's purpose.
Nice.
If you feel called to. And if you do feel called to, it's I think in part because this question of what do I do? What makes a truly worthwhile, rich, and deep life? And that, in my opinion, inevitably reaches to service. Because a life of great depth is one where you're touching human beings and the more than human realm, but just to keep it to humans for a moment. We want to know what is the way that I can most deeply impact for the good of the world? How can I help evolve a human being, including myself, but also the species? I mean, we're at a point, a juncture, an inflection point where we live in partly, I think, a patho-adolescent society
where
our greed and so forth has gotten out of control. And as a species, you know, we'll go the way of the other sapien species that are no longer present. We'll find ourselves going extinct, and we're taking down quite a few other species with us.
As is well documented, and I'm thinking as you're speaking of some of the ways, at least to my mind, that purpose can look, and I wonder what you'd say to this, because not everybody's going to become a teacher, a guide, a therapist, a you know, instructor of some kind. And of a young man in his early to mid-20s who came to do some plumbing at our house, the pipes were clogged or something, and he came, and there was a pride and a humility and just a love, I would have to say, that he was emanating, and the support and a kindness, and all of us in the house just were kind of taken by him. And he said, well, I'm a third generation plumber, and I can't even remember all the details of how he conducted himself, but he was clearly in a purpose that while he was a plumber and in the family lineage, he was really kind of a deeper covert healer or something like that. I don't know what to call him, but
yeah.
Expressing some other purpose through this vocation, through a trade where, you know, not most plumbers, I would have to guess, have this kind of an impact in the world. So I wonder what that stirs in you to hear a story like that.
I think change agents, you know, cultural evolutionary change agents come in so many packages. I'm just remembering the checkout counter at Trader Joe's, and there's this Mexican fellow, and he just was beaming. Like, we engaged in a conversation, and, you know, to me, it's not the sexiest job. It's not something I'd want to do, is bag groceries at a grocery store. But and I didn't spend enough time with him to really kind of dial into, you know, any of these facets of purpose. But I will say that he improved the quality of my life by being himself. And he gifted me something, which I wouldn't be able to articulate. Again, it was just a couple minutes. So if you really know your soul's purpose, like as a whole person midwife, I would find some way, somehow, if I were a plumber or bagging groceries, to do that work.
Mm-hmm.
So where you are, you don't necessarily have to change your delivery system, you know, tomorrow or today to do your soul work. if you're doing accounting or bagging groceries or whatever it is, challenge yourself. How can my soul's deepest, service be expressed right now with the person in front of me in this moment? And with ourselves. I mean, we bless ourselves with our own soul's purpose. We're actually, in some ways, the first recipient of our soul's gift. And that sometimes gets lost. Sometimes when we think of ourselves as guides, we feel like our main job is to guide others. But our own ego and personality also need our very own blessing.
So you're saying you're kind of mentoring, guiding yourself into your own purpose, if you're a purpose guide at some level.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm continuing to use my own model to midwife myself into greater clarity, higher definition and pixelation of my own understanding and my own embodiment of my purpose. And that's exciting because it's endless. I mean, there's no way, even if I live to be 100, that I'll come to the end of it. I'm curious just, about your work in doing quests. Do you find, the majority, first of all, what percentage of people who come to quests, and you can change the formulation of the question, are looking for this sort of descent to soul, this soul encounter about their purpose?
It so varies from trip to trip, day to day. You know, a shorter day quest, smaller percentage. A longer quest, when people are committing more of their vitality and time and life trajectory, really, to it, and other resources, I'd say we probably get somewhere between a third to a half of the people.
Wow, that's huge.
You know, it really varies. If it's a younger cohort, a youth quest that's 16 to 22, they're in a different place with that. And kind of just some of them looking to kind of magnetize their compass needle and kind of discern what's a yes and what's a no, or what is it to have an inner life? They're kind of at that level more. But that's, for many of them, that can be on that breadcrumb trail towards purpose. And then for adults, it really varies. You know, there's some who come really openly looking in a time of a major life change. I'm, dropping this career or this job, or I've already dropped it. What's next for me? And that can be kind of on the middle world and the lower world soul level. And it's a place, at least in our technology of questing, as you put it, that really our job is to help them really just take the dive and really invest themselves in it and open themselves to what's there. And for sure, it's a dance with the mystery. You never know what's going to come, what level of unveiling or unfolding. But it was on my own first quest 20-some years ago that I got that real clear call that was and is to be a part of my work. And I've been kind of on a path angling towards that and looking for that delivery system for years and years, and with various dead ends and disappointments that's come with that. There's something also about calling. You mentioned that term, and that's something I've come to trust, calling or longing, and that kind of trembling excitement and fear of, oh, there's really a change that I'm hungry for, so much so that I'm willing to go out and fast alone in the wilderness, or I'm willing to step in and look at this dream that I'd really rather forget about, or anything like that. And so I wonder, for you, is there a way that you could describe about how you see calling factoring into purpose for people?
Yeah, I use the word calling and purpose nearly synonymously. I mean, there are so many callings, and as there are purposes. I mean, sometimes, if I'm really hungry, my purpose is to seek out some food. And certainly, if I were a Syrian refugee trying to find a raft or a boat to, get out of the war zone, my purpose would be survival and safety for me and my family. So, I'm glad Maslow has a hierarchy, because it's important to acknowledge that not every moment is going to be, that soul encounter will be the first priority of business. And that's as it should be. But calling, I feel intuitively that life isn't a mistake. It's a magical, mysterious thing. I mean, here we are. I'm in my late 40s. I think you're in your young early 50s.
Very young, yes.
but really, our true age is 13.72 billion years old. I mean, we you and I are sitting 3 feet apart, but we were much closer. You and I, 13 billion years ago, we were at that singularity. Everything was together. Everything.
Supernova.
Boom. And it was like an explode. Who knows? Maybe they'll find out, the scientists will have a different explanation, but they call it the Big Bang. And it's just this blossoming forward, right? It's just this huge bloom of evolution. And here we are, the same age, 13.72 billion years. And it seems like everything in nature, everything in wild nature, expresses itself just perfectly. The squirrels that are constantly running over my roof, the redwood I see outside, everything blooms. My two cats, they're hiding right now, express, Sage is one, Strider is the other. They express themselves just absolutely perfectly. But humans, right, with this this evolutionary development, which I'm very fond of, by the way, is the cerebral cortex and reflective thinking, we can get in our way and basically top out, say maybe 22, 25, and basically stop evolving. We've kind of
22, 25 years old.
Yeah, like sometime, let's say post college, you get a job, and a lot of people will kind of, their evolution will more or less halt there, because culture ceases to be a pacer of change at some point. Mm-hmm. And then for those who want more, they'll come to you for a quest, or to me for purpose guiding, because they actually feel inside called to something more. I mean, where will humans be 100, 1,000, 100,000, a million years from now? We're a very young species, depending on how you date it. We're either 200,000 years old or 40,000 years for modern humans. So we're still kind of getting our feet, our balance with this new capacity, our cerebral capacities. And we can think about things like calling, like what is this life for? And what is my place? Where do I belong?
And how do you know? I think there's probably a lot of ways you could speak to this, but how do you know when someone's finding the answer to that? How does that show up in them? How can you perceive that in them?
Yeah. A few things. One is, for the person, I think it's self-authenticating. So,
what do you mean?
Well, so when I heard the words whole person midwifery, for me, it was like bursting into flames. Like, bah! There was a sense of excitement, of trembling. Rudolf Otto, the mysterium tremendum, this tremendous mystery. When you receive your soul name, if you will, it's like waking up from a very powerful dream. There's the room seems to change. There's a shift
in your body. You had a strong sensation, tingling.
Somatically, yeah, you're not like kind of like, oh, ho-hum, whole person midwifery.
Yeah, maybe that's something. It's not a thought by itself by any means.
Right. It may, cogitation may be part of it, but you feel it really deeply. Another piece is, I can see it. I mean, I'm just thinking about a purpose guiding client I had. And more often than not, it's living a soul-infused life seems to me that the people I work with, it's like standing in a fog, and they get soul-infused sort of and saturated wet with soul very slowly over time. But there are times when it's like suddenly I'm sitting with someone and I'm guiding them and a waterfall gets turned on.
Right.
And it just sort of like you just see them wake up before your eyes. And those are very special times. They're dramatic examples.
Totally.
But I think the real test is this this quote that we've mentioned a few times, is when you are finding that you are living in a way that brings you alive and filled with joy and gladness, And the world is asking you for that. It's literally longing and aching for you to give that particular gift. That is evidence, if you will, that you have found that sweet spot. You belong to your soul's deepest calling.
So it's not something that people miss when it happens to them.
No, not at all. It's self-evident to them. Here's a test. So when I have this conversation once in a while, we don't actually play the lottery, but we have the conversation anyway, me and my wife, and we're like, what if we won, you know, $100 million? And I said, what would you do? And it's a really interesting question.
Yes.
And she goes, I'd quit my day job and I'd just write. She's writing
books. She's kind of in the process of doing.
She's doing that. Yeah, but she'd do it full time. Uh-huh. So what that says to me is that her current day job is not a perfect fit for her soul's calling. She would no longer do it. And then and she says, well, how about you? And then she interrupts me before I even say it. She says, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say you're going to do the exact same thing. And I say, well, I think so. Now, of course, it's never been tested. I haven't won $100 million, so I can't say for certain. And honestly, you know, I would totally eat in better restaurants and have some fun.
Maybe
and
a
so
few
forth.
Less hours of...
I don't know. I actually love my work.
Right.
I would. There'd be parts of my work that I'd farm out, like sure, marketing. Exactly. I'd be like, oh, I'll pay you to do it. But being a whole person midwife is one of my true great joys. So I don't know that I'd want to retire from it.
Right.
So my suspicion is. So that's a good question. If you can ask yourself, you know. Right now, would I be doing what I'm doing if money were completely out of the picture?
Right.
And I think so many, like, you know, Vision Quest guides would say this. I mean, no one goes into questing for money. They do it for the it's a sacred calling.
Exactly. And I think of there's such a sense of gratitude and privilege of getting to serve in this kind of way. I was just out guiding a trip with a family from Europe. And a father and three teenage sons, each at their own major life transition. And just to feel so grateful to sit with them and watch them transform, to see that happening through the reflection of the natural wild world around us and the mountains and the thunderstorms and the 8.5 foot tall moose and all of that, just the sense that I had of, you know, pinch, how do I get to be here? What did I do to deserve this and get to be here and be supported in doing this and taken seriously and well received. And so that's, for me at least, that sense of privilege and gratitude to be in this kind of role is really a part of that.
I your language so resonates with me. You, when you're living your soul's purpose, you regard not every moment of life, but so much of life as absolute privilege. I mean, it's just, I am so lucky that my this is from Harvey Swifter, a Native American teacher. And he says, the trick is you want your survival dance and your sacred dance to be the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I am both earning a living, that's my survival dance, putting food on the table for myself and my family, and I'm doing my sacred dance, and it's the same thing, purpose guiding. So were I to take this survival piece away because I won, you know, the mega lottery, I would still be doing the sacred dance because that's the true enjoyment. Yes, I'd spend a little more time on some hedonic pleasures of eating and going to more jazz concerts and skiing. I'd go and ski more often. But while pleasure is something I absolutely desire, I would get bored doing nothing but eating in 5-star restaurants and skiing. I mean, you know.
Yeah, not
then,
enough
then
of
what?
You would be engaged.
No, it would be a very thin life.
So something that you've got going on here that I think is really exciting that I want people to hear about before we wrap up, out of this passion and gratitude, you've created this event coming up soon.
Yeah. So there's an event in Berkeley. It's Tuesday, September 6th, and it's an introduction to this work of purpose guiding. So people can come and just enjoy it. It's free, just as a standalone, just to become to sort of edified and learn more about it. Some people might be drawn to it because they might be interested in receiving purpose guiding. Mm-hmm. And a third piece is if a person's already a coach or a therapist or a spiritual director, they may be interested in learning the skill set of purpose guiding and adding it to their own delivery system work. So there's a training, an 8-month training I do once a year that's coming up. So all that will be covered. And I, if it's all right, can I mention one other project?
Yeah. Yes, please.
There's a summit for folks who, don't live in the area, or, by the time you listen to this, maybe the event is past. One of the things that I want to leave behind, other than, hundreds or thousands of purpose guides and an institute, is a record of people that I regard as elders. So I've been making these short films where I'm interviewing people, Bill Plotkin, Jean Houston, Stephen Jenkinson, Michael Mead, Joanna Macy, some folks that I regard as folks who are living the soul-infused life. And some of them are quite elderly. Joanna's 88,
right.
So needed to make that film, on the sooner side. So if people are interested, they can go to purposeguides.org, purposeguides.org, and you just sign up, and then once a week, one of these films is released into your inbox. And it's a nice way to start a week, is to listen. They're about 20-minute interviews. They're edited
Beautiful.
Down.
And that's something that'll be available starting when and for how long?
It'll start in mid-September 2016, and it'll live on the internet, hopefully forever for future generations, who won't get to meet these people. So it's a gift. It's an offering to my people.
That's awesome. And how many interviews do you have queued up for now?
Wow, we have a lot. I think right now we've got 12 in the can, and just heard from another great fellow, Tales of the Talking Jaguar. What's his name?
Martin
Prechtel.
Secrets, yeah.
Yeah, he's a very, very powerful writer and teacher. I haven't
totally.
Met him.
Oh, he's awesome.
Yeah, so he's agreed to be on the program. And we also have some kind of one-offs. Like I have Adyashanti, who's a more of an upper world teacher. And purpose isn't that's not his specialization. But I wanted to throw in a few sort of curveballs, because I didn't want to just speak to people who drank the purpose Kool-Aid.
Right.
I felt like I wanted to challenge my own assumptions and notions and stories. So he's involved. And so it's a pretty cool summit.
It sounds really cool. Well, thanks for that information. I wonder if it'd be a fun way to sort of transition off a short little Adyashanti story. I believe he was there. It was maybe 10 or 12 years ago, and somehow I ended up sitting at the table at a friend's house in San Rafael, of mostly therapists and a couple meditation teachers, and I believe Adyashanti was there. And so fun to play poker with these men. It was all men who had spent decades in being authentic and sincere. Of course, poker is not that I'm good at it at all, but it's so much about bluffing and deception, and there was nobody could lie in that poker game. And maybe he could, I can't remember his role, but just to sit at a table, I have a brother-in-law who's a great poker player and fools me constantly, but with this crew and so sincere, no one could bluff, you would always know. So that's kind of one of my only personal contacts with him, though I've heard great things, so.
Yeah, no, he's an amazing teacher, and it's an interesting thing to get a spiritual perspective from an upper world or transcendent or classical enlightenment, tradition like Adyashanti comes from, and get his view on the underworld journey, the descent and soul. So
I'd like to hear that one.
Yeah,
great. So this class is coming up in Berkeley, September 6th,
yep.
2016.
Yeah.
And then the summit becomes available
mid September.
Okay, great. And your training, when does that start?
October.
So that's pretty soon. So people who want to get on this,
can just go to the site purposeguides.org, and there's a little questionnaire, and you fill that out, and then you can get a 30-minute free kind of exploratory session with me to see if it's a good fit for you.
Great. Well, thanks for taking your time to talk with me today, and I'm really glad to have this opportunity to share what you're offering the world to our circle.
Oh, well, thank you. I so appreciate it. It's really fun getting to talk shop with you, Dave.
Totally.
All right.
Be well.
All right.